everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 63. And tonight, as always, or not as always, but as always from a few weeks ago, we are live on DLive, and we are also live on RadioAlbion.com. Now, as people know, we used to be live on YouTube. However, we have moved away from YouTube for very, very good reason. So we are always here. This is our new home. Wednesday night, you can find us on DLive, 7 p.m. UK time, and that's 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we are also live on RadioAlbion.com. Now, Radio Albion is run by my good friend Sven Longshanks. That is a great site full of nationalist material, numerous shows, music, and restreaming of other shows that you might have missed through the day. So if you want more nationalist material, a great place to get it is RadioAlbion.com. Now, if you would like to contribute to this show, one of the best ways to contribute, or the best way to contribute to the show, is via Entropy. So if you want to send a super chat, if you want to send a donation, please do so via Entropy. The link is on my Telegram. It's also on my Twitter, and it's in the chat now and will be posted sporadically throughout the show. Now, anyone who sends in a donation will have their comment or question read out live. Anyone who asks a question that is a non-paid question will get their question read out if it is one of the top voted questions. So it is a meritocracy. The best questions rise to the top and the worst questions slide down, and the best questions get asked every week. And if you want to contribute in other ways, a great way to do so is via Bitcoin. You can find my Bitcoin address over on my BitChute or YouTube account. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me by emailing me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. If you email me, I can give you bank details if you wish to make a donation, or I can get you in touch with local PA activists or answer any questions or help you with any issues that you may have. So that's mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, if you enjoy these shows but wonder where they all go, they go to my BitChute account. Now, lots of people keep messaging me. Some people still don't understand that my regular Friday afternoon shows are now always the pre-recorded, short, snappy shows. They are now always on BitChute, and there's a full archive of all my previous videos as well as previous episodes of Patriotic Weekly Review. They're all over on BitChute. That's the home of all my material. I don't release anything at the moment on YouTube for obvious reasons. So please make sure you are subscribed to my BitChute. Now, this week, or it's not this week, last week was a little bit of a week of disappointments in some way, because you might have heard me in last week's show discussing a debate that was going to take place. Now, this debate was meant to be between the lovely Laura Towler and a guy called Frankie Ruffalo from the For Britain movement. Now, on the day of the debate, Frankie Ruffalo soiled his pants, and he was told by all of his superiors that he was not allowed to debate Laura Towler, and he ran away with his tail between his legs, squealing as loud as he could, and saying that Laura wasn't relevant enough for him to talk to, and it wasn't a good use of his time, and all this other nonsense. But really, we know why he wouldn't debate Laura. We know why Anne-Marie Waters won't debate me. So sadly, it was another one of these debates that got cancelled because the person who was meant to be doing the debating wasn't up to the task and was in fact told by other For Britain members that they weren't allowed to do it. So a little bit disappointing. Now, if you want to get involved with Patriotic Alternative, you can go to our website, which is actually run by Laura Towler. That's www.patrioticalternative.org.uk. There's regular news items, multiple go up per day, as well as announcements of activities. And I'm going to keep pushing this every week up until August the 9th. But do not forget August the 9th. It is Indigenous Peoples Day. And it is a day when we are asking all of our activists to go out and do a little bit of activism and hoist up a White Lives Matter banner somewhere, take a photo of it, and then upload that photograph to Twitter or other social networks with the hashtag White Lives Matter. And we intend to get that trending on Indigenous People's Day. Now, our wonderful guest tonight, Bernadine Bluntley, she was a little late, but she has now arrived and is waiting. And I'll be introducing her in about 2 minutes when I've said, hello, Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend? And who is on tap this week?
Every week is an amazing week. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I am in Avatar only because I'm on the road at an IRL doing some work for our people. And so that's what we should be doing, as like Mark and all are doing with these banners across the UK. And anybody else I told to reach out to these good folks if you wanted to participate, I hope you did. And I hope you will be participating this coming Saturday. I believe it's at noon. Is going to be our TAP episode with John Bruce. And it's going to be an amazing discussion we're going to have. Mr. George and I are going to delve into one of his latest articles. Very insightful stuff. We hope you can all make it to that. But I'm really looking forward to an amazing conversation with Bernadine. And we have Mark, we were just talking before the show, and there was another piece of information that was just shown to me about, of course, we have Mr. Tucker Carlson was Me Too'd, and then the New York Times, I believe it was, we might discuss this over the course of the night, doxed him, gave out his address again. It's not the first time his address was given out, but it was given out again. So maybe it's something else we can talk about over the course of the night, but I'm very excited about being here with you and everybody in the chat. But folks, I won't be in the live chat today because I am out of the office, so you'll have to just trudge through it and stiff upper lip it without me. But otherwise, I'll be here and looking forward to a great show. I'll pass it back to you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Jason. It is great to have you here, as always. And now it is time to introduce our special guest. Now, some of you will know her and some of you don't. Her name is Bernadine Bluntley. She is a lovely lady. She is a wife. She is a mother. She is a traditionalist. She is an advocate for the traditional family. She is an advocate for traditional motherhood and stay-at-home mums. But while she is at home looking after her lovely and growing family, she also produces excellent content on Instagram. She produces wonderful t-shirts and has a t-shirt business, all with slogans that push back against the woke narrative. And I actually got in touch with her and met her through a guest who was on the show 2 weeks ago, which was Vincent James. I met her on Instagram. She's got an amazing Instagram. She does some wonderful content there. So if you want to catch up with her, I think the best place to do so is on Instagram, because I couldn't actually find a Twitter handle for you, unfortunately. You should definitely get one, because you post some great stuff on Instagram. And I definitely have started using Instagram a little bit more, because people seem to be gravitating away from sites like Facebook to Instagram now. So please, without further ado, here is Bernadine. Introduce yourself. Tell the viewers where they can find you and how they can contribute to your excellent work.
Thank you, Mark, for having me. I'm really honored to be here with y'all tonight. Well, tonight for y'all, it's still daytime here. But yeah, I'm on Instagram, Bernadine Bluntley. I'm not on Twitter. I opened an account like last week because somebody had asked me to, but I just don't feel like I'm gonna last on there. I feel like I'm gonna get banned if I ever posted anything. So let's see what happens. But yeah, Instagram's my go-to. Yeah, I just really focus on exposing cultural Marxism, and not just exposing that, but also pushing the opposite of it, which would be traditional living, you know, what's right, what's godly, what's good. And so that's just my passion. And yes, I'm married. We will be celebrating 9 years in November, and we have 3 children. One of them, actually, our oldest, is going to be turning 8 tomorrow. So that's exciting. And then we have a 7-year-old and a 1-year-old. So really, really busy. Got our hands full.
And I know how that is. I don't know how that is, actually. I sort of know how that is, because I have one child, a little girl called Sophia, whose first birthday is just 5 days away. birthday, she'll be making her second appearance on PWR if she's awake and if she isn't being too much of a little terror, because they are an awful handful when they're about 1 year old and they're learning to walk and move about. But they are also a joy and they are our future and they are so important. But you are best known, really, for your pushback against feminism, against cultural Marxism, and against the attacks on the traditional family. How did you get involved with that, and what really woke you up to the fact that the traditional family was under such relentless attack?
Right. Well, I grew up in a religious home. You know, we would go to church every Sunday and things like that. But it wasn't until I was about 16 years old that I gave my life to Christ. And so I wanted to grow in my Christian walk and all of that. But even then, as a Christian, I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but looking back now, I realized that even the church wasn't really emphasizing family, you know. So I grew up as a Christian, but what I wanted to do was, you know, to go out there and to change the world and to, you know, preach and write books and do all kinds of things. And I never really was discipled to focus on the home, on family, on having children, raising children. Like, I always, you know, realized that everybody ends up doing that. You know, everybody gets married, everybody has children. But there's a difference between doing it and knowing how to do it and being passionate about doing it. So my mind wasn't always in the right place. I was always pushed in different directions. You know, I wanted, of course, to do well as a wife and a mom, but I also felt like I had to do more. You know, I had to do more with my life. I had to change the world. You know, I didn't want to waste my talents and my gifts and all kinds of things like that. So I would try to do all these other things on the side that, you know, I would look at myself and say, okay, what am I good at doing? What did God give me to do? So I would try to, like, speak at places. I would try to do this and I would try to do that. But I was in a season in my life where I was really, like, in the trenches of motherhood. I had two kids back to back. They're like a year and 2 months apart. And it's not really doable. It's not really doable to have small children and travel and speak. You know what I mean? I mean, you can, but you're going to be stretched and you're going to be pulled in different directions, not just physically, but in your mind, etc. You know, your emotions, your attention. And so during that time, I just was really conflicted. And I was really frustrated, you know, because when I wasn't a Christian, the world was telling me that my purpose in life was to get a career, you know, to have a successful job and to thrive in that. And then when I became a Christian, everyone was telling me that I need to go out there in the world and preach, you know, and write books and do all the other things that I saw other famous Christian women were doing. And so there was a lot of conflict, a lot of frustration internally and also in my marriage. And I just got to the point where I told God, like, I don't know how to do this. You know, I don't know how to truly be happy in life. And he basically showed me through the Bible. I mean, I don't know if y'all are Christian or not, but he showed me through the Bible that my focus in life, my priority in life, was to raise my children and to serve my family, you know. And you don't even have to be a Christian to understand that and to believe that and to apply that in your life. You have to use logic. You just have to see things long term and see the big picture. And so I mean, it's a long story. I had a lot of things to unlearn, a lot of things to learn, and I'm still going through that process. But I decided I'm not gonna, you know, try to travel and speak and do poetry, which is what I was doing. I was performing at the time because it was pulling me too much. And I just started learning how to really embrace my role in this season of my life as a young wife, as a young mom. And when I finally was content, you know, finally content with my season, and I said, Lord, if I don't do anything else, if I don't use anything else with my quote talents, you know, my abilities, whatever, that's fine, because this is my priority. What more important thing could I be doing than investing in new life, you know, and basically discipling new life and teaching them all the things that I wish I was taught when I was a kid, you know, and making sure they're protected from the things that I wish I was protected from when I was a kid. And so it's like there's a lot of redemption to it and a lot of freedom in what I experienced. And when I told the Lord, like, I don't want to, you know, I don't have to do anything else, it feels like that's when things kind of started to open up because I had my priorities straight, you know. So, but I just focus on doing things online. I don't want to work outside the home, you know, like work 9 to 5 somewhere. I don't want to make a habit of traveling and speaking, not when my kids are so small and they need me so much. And so it seemed like after that happened, you know, the online stuff started working out, which was something I was also trying to push back then, but it just wouldn't work. But it, I just feel like the Lord was changing my heart and prioritizing my heart. And yeah, I just learned that this is what is important right now. Maybe when my kids are older, you know, then I can do other things like out there. But it's just truly embracing the season, embracing motherhood, embracing being a homemaker and not seeing it as a chore or something that's holding me back. And it's a boring thing that I'm doing when I could be doing all these other things out there. And yeah, that's, and I learned about feminism. I learned about the history of it. I learned about the women and the people who were pushing it and why they were pushing it. You know, they disguise it as freedom, you know, freedom for women, but it's truly not. They had an agenda behind it. It was a political thing. And a lot of us see the fruit of that now. But you just learn a lot about it ideologically. And I was able to learn a lot and apply it to my personal life.
I was going to ask you about your Christianity next, but I think you've answered that question before I had the chance to ask it. But one thing that I really like about your posts on Instagram, and one thing that you seem to be very aware of, is a certain Middle Eastern tribe that seemed to be behind feminism and cultural Marxism. Now, I've seen many attractive young mums who take to Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and talk about the traditional family, but none of them will dare talk about the tribe that is actually behind the cultural Marxism, the feminism, the indoctrination in schools. They won't talk about the tribe that wants a border wall for their country, but wants America to have open borders and welcome everyone. What woke you up to the JQ, and how did you find the strength to start talking about something that many people in your position could have willfully ignored, kept their mouths shut, and moved into sort of more mainstream Republican politics and probably made quite a healthy living out of it?
Right. And I actually started off that way. What was this, back in 2018? You know, I started seeing that, I started seeing that the media was attacking Trump, and I was like, that's wrong. You know, they're spreading fake news. And so I started seeing that he was, you know, he was probably good for us. And so I would, I guess you could say I was a MAGA girl at the time. And that was it, you know, but around March 2019, what happened was, I don't know if you know about this film, but there's this film called Unplanned. I don't even know if they showed it in the UK, but it's basically a movie about abortion. So it's based on a true life story of Abby Johnson. She used to be very, very pro-abortion. She was even in charge of an abortion clinic. And basically throughout her story, she becomes pro-life, and now she's like a world-renowned pro-life speaker. And anyways, I watched that film March 2019, and, you know, it exposes the depravity of abortion, right? And how it hurts not only the unborn, but everyone involved. And the thing is, I already knew about abortion for like a decade. I've known about it since college. But when I watched that film in theaters, you know, I'm watching it and it's mainstream and everybody is being exposed to the truth about abortion, which has been going on since the 70s. It's been legalized since the 70s, I mean, in America. And I just got frustrated. I was really heartbroken. Realizing that I've known about this personally for 10 years, realizing that our country and the world at large has been learning more and more about abortion and how evil and wicked it is. They know about the procedures. They know about how inhumane it is. But somehow in our society, it's still legal. Somehow in our society, it's still going on. We drive by abortion clinics every day. You know, they're extremely wealthy. They're extremely influential. They have Instagram accounts. You know, Planned Parenthood has Instagram accounts and Twitter and all these things. While everyone is becoming aware, and almost everyone is aware, that they are killing innocent human beings in the womb in the most torturous, barbaric ways. And I was just really heartbroken and frustrated because it's like, this has been going on forever. It feels like I've known about this forever. I've tried to, you know, speak up on this topic, and I've tried to do what I could about this. And a lot of people have done a lot of things to basically end abortion, but there is something really strong. There are strong forces behind this. There is a lot of funding behind this. There is an ideology that someone would have to not only defend abortion, basically infanticide, but to push it, to justify it, to celebrate it, to, you know, have people say that they're proud of it, and they're having hashtags on Twitter and all kinds of things. Like, it's normal, like it's okay. There is something very, very wrong. You know, I thought to myself, there's something extremely wrong about the fact that this is still happening, even though people know how wicked it is. And I was crying after I watched that movie, and I was just broken, and I asked God, you know, what is going on here? What is the ideology behind such a tight group of elite people, you know, that are running the show, that are funding these things? Why is it so hard to push back on this? I wanted answers, and I asked God for answers because I was so done. I was so fed up with it. I mean, it's just the reality. If anyone has studied history, they know that whenever there is a propaganda or if there's anything being pushed and it's so hard to end it, it's probably because there is a tight group of people that are well-funded and are well, you know, they're really connected in their ideology of why they defend something or why they are able to accomplish something. And so I asked the Lord for answers. And immediately, like I kid you not, weeks after I asked him for answers, he started just downpour of information. Just my eyes were opened. The things that were keeping me from seeing reality and the truth was just removed. And I was just really just amazed that I hadn't known about it before, you know? Little red pills, little hints that people would drop online. It just started coming all at once. And so I would start digging. I would start, you know, watching documentaries. I would start looking into books, and I would find, you know, primary sources. That way I know for sure it's a fact. That's not, you know, just something that somebody made up. And I just, you know, it is an ideology, and it's Talmudic, it's Marxism, it's Kabbalah, it's all of those things that it absolutely ties up with the Bible. Absolutely ties up with the Bible. It lines up with everything that Jesus said. So it's not something that makes me question my faith. I asked God for answers. He gave me answers, and it's absolutely biblical. You know, these people believe that when a child is unborn, they're not human. They're basically like water. You know, they're just water. And they don't have any rights. They don't have any human rights. And so there's no loss in aborting, you know, ending a pregnancy, because it's nothing. It's like not even a living organism to them. And it's not all J's. I don't know how you want me to censor this. Do we have to censor on DLive? It's not all of them, but it comes from.
No, we can speak much more openly on DLive. That's why we're here. So if we're on YouTube now, the stream would have been cut. But yeah, you're free like to speak more openly here, which is, as I say, a very, very good and relieving thing. And you have got away quite a long time for actually speaking about the JQ over on Instagram. And that's what When I was introduced to you via Vincent, I was actually like, wow, because the amount of posts you were posting about it, I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I get called an anti-Semite like every other day. Look, I don't think anyone is guilty of anything based on their race, based on who they are at birth, because those are not things you can change. You can't control that, you know. I don't think all Jews are this way. Some Jews become believers in Christ. I mean, that happens in the Bible, you know. The whole point is that it's not a coincidence that this ideology comes from a certain group of people. You know, just like, for example, I don't know if this is a good example, but like Buddhism, okay, not all Buddhists are from, you know, East Asia, but a lot of Buddhists are from East Asia. It's not a coincidence. And then I want to go back to the Bible where Jesus talks about the synagogue of Satan. Okay, was Jesus an anti-Semite? Like, did he hate all Jews because he called out the Pharisees because he called them the synagogue of Satan and not the mosque of Satan or the church of Satan or, you know, what do you want to call them? No, he wasn't an anti-Semite. He's Lord. He's Savior. He tells the truth and he doesn't care what people say because he's not living for human beings. You know, he's living for his glory. He's living for his Father. And I was so desperate for answers on abortion that when God gave it to me, I wasn't just going to be quiet about it. You know what I mean? Like, I asked him for an answer. I asked him for the truth. And now I'm just going to shut up about it. Like, that's not gratitude. That's not fair, because a lot of other people are searching for answers as desperately as I was. So who am I to withhold the truth from them when this is exactly what we need right now as a society? Because if we don't know the who behind the what, it's never going to end. You know, abortion's never going to end. Feminism is never going to be exposed. Homosexuality, the LGBT propaganda, pornography, all of these kinds of things, they all come from one root of ideology. You know, you can't just be okay with all of these things for no reason. I know we're all like fallen and sinful human beings, but to not only be active in this, but be proud of it, you know, be excited about it, to purposefully harm other people and have no conscience, there's something wrong and there's something specific about it, about that. And, you know, I believe any and all of these people can repent and come to Christ. I think that anyone involved in all of these things can change, but that doesn't excuse them from being exposed. That doesn't excuse them from being criticized just because they slap some label and say, oh, you're being anti-Semitic. Like, no, I don't hate all Jews. I don't. I have a ton, well, I don't know if a ton, gosh, like dozens of people who follow me who are Jewish, who are half Jewish, who used to be, you know, part of Judaism, who converted. I mean, and they are also like, they know what's going on a lot more than a lot of these Christian Zionists. They know what's happening and they hate it. And they're, you know, they support me. They are excited that I'm exposing it because they know it's wicked and wrong. Again, it's all about your ideology, not what race you're born into or things you can't control. Like, I don't focus on that. I focus on your ideology. And if you support this or you defend it or you stay silent on it, then I would consider you guilty if you're aware of it and you're not doing anything about it. You know, so I don't know. Yeah, I get flack for it. People accuse me of things, but people accuse me of anything. You know, I'm a misogynist and I'm a racist and it's like, whatever. I can't control what people think. I can just control how I present information as best as I can without getting banned, which is really difficult sometimes. But, you know, I just think it all comes down to the fact that the truth is more important than people's opinions. And long term, I serve Christ. I serve God who knows all things. I don't serve human beings.
Well, Bernadine, thank you. That really elaborated there on Mark's question. I appreciate that. And again, thank you for being with us. I do have a question for you. And what I'll do, I guess I'll mention it and then I'll circle back to it. And the question that I'll circle back to is about the attacks on the churches, the painting of Jesus and Mary statues, brown from white, and this sort of thing. So I'll circle back to that. But I did have two thoughts as you were talking that I wanted to speak to. And the first is, that a little earlier, unless I misunderstood you, and I'm not pigeonholing you here, but I think you said that, you know, we all get married and we all get to have children. Regrettably, because of that ideology, this anti-white ideology that you object to, which is feminism, many of our women have been led into this unrestrained female hypergamy. And as a consequence, many of our men do not get to marry. And as a consequence, many of them don't get to father children. We end up with these much older ladies who have ruined their lives in going from one man to the next, trying to get the prettiest face guy they can get. And then they end up suddenly later in life and they decide, oh, now I'm going to go have the guy that I should have been dating, you know, 20 years earlier. Regrettably, we don't all get to get married and have children as a consequence of that. The other thing I want to point out to, and I think is going to be really pertinent to certainly this audience, is that abortion was designed to kill white people. It was marketed to white people. White women were the ones that were targeted with the just absolutely plexiform, manifold marketing schemes and stratagems that were extraordinarily complex to convince white women that life as a single, life with many sex partners, life without children was going to be vastly superior to having these big white families, which white people used to do. We used to have great big white families. And sometimes, I think in the South, I mean, it was very easy to find just a couple of generations ago. You'd see like 12, 15 children ultimately would be born to a family. So it's very common. And the anti-whites, you know, they obviously objected to this. They didn't like all these white babies turning up and being proud of who they were and where they're from and their history. So they marketed this to white women. And we can look back at the literature, as I've done, and we see that indeed, in all of this marketing, it was almost 100% targeted at white women, this empowerment idea targeting white women. Now, what we do see is that it is, as is the case, we see that non-white people are often collateral damage in this targeting and this fixation on harming the white race. And so we end up seeing that, of course, it is convenient to for Democrats in the United States to say, well, normally my constituency, you would have to pay for these things. And so if you'll vote for me, then I will provide it right in your community, and we will make the white population shoulder the burden of those costs. And of course, we see this manifested in organizations like Planned Parenthood. So it is incorrect when we hear about, especially from Alex Jones types, that, oh, they put Planned Parenthood in non-white neighborhoods because they're trying to get rid of the poor non-white people. No, those are Democrats who are getting votes from these people because they promise them things for free. And one of the things they need is abortions. Another thing they need are liquor stores. And that's why we end up seeing a lot of liquor stores in these areas as well. So all of these things that we see in these non-white neighborhoods are not a consequence of this regime of white people serving the interests of whites and therefore harming non-whites by putting things like liquor stores where they can get their 40 ounces on one corner and then get aborted on the other corner. That is just, as I say, collateral damage. But now circling back, so those are some of my thoughts. And I thank you for your testimony of how Jesus Christ has influenced you, the Christian church has influenced you. And so having said that, we now see across the West, along with, and of course this is no accident, along with George Washington being taken down, favorites of Southerners like myself, Robert E. Lee, Thomas Jefferson and the like, statues taken down, and then as effigies drowned as the precursor, as they're thrown into lakes and rivers, drowned as the precursors to throwing white people and drowning them in lakes, hanged as the effigies, as the precursor to hanging white people. We see that. And of course, the burning of the records, the changing of street names, and along with all of that, commensurate with that is the painting of Mary statues brown, the painting of Jesus statues brown, where they are not outright destroying them. Of course, churches being set on fire and destroyed, historic churches, brand new churches across the West. These are all hush crimes. They contradict the anti-white narrative. So they're not being talked about on a global scale or international scale. But of course, by way of peer-to-peer communication, we're seeing on Facebook and the like and elsewhere where people communicate now, Parler and a lot of these new places, mm-hmm. VK, that indeed this is happening across the totality of the West. So this targeting is of Christianity as part of the white man's religion around the world. And so what are your thoughts on seeing this religion of this religion of yours? And I was, just to be clear, I was Christian. I attended many different denominations over the years. When I was a young man, I went with all my friends' families, everything from Catholic, Mormon, and then every, you know, Baptist, Presbyterian, everything that you could imagine, I think I attended. But I heard from the pulpit in every one of these cases, anti-whiteism being taught rather than the Bible. And so I walked away from it years ago. My opinion is, if Jesus appears before me and asks me to return, I will. But you know, until then, there's an anti-white problem in the church. And so the question is both this. Are you seeing the anti-white ideology expressed in your church and in your environments, What do you think about how anti-whitism is undermining the ability of the church to resist this attack on the church, the burning of the churches and the painting of the statues brown? And what do you anticipate for the future of Christianity as this white erasure of the church continues apace? I mean, do you see Christianity surviving as by transitioning sort of like the Republican Party into another non-white promoting entity, just like the Democrats? Or do you see it just being burnt to the ground and Christian communities, just small Christian communities forming, where people just come together and they say, we've abandoned the official church of whatever denomination we're in, and we're just going to, you know, Bible study in our community and that sort of thing. So I toss it over to you.
Right. I'll do like a little comment on the first thing you said. As far as like when I said, you know, everybody gets married and everybody has kids, it is notable that I was thinking that way almost a decade now, because I did get married like 9 years ago. So during that time, it was more like mainstream for people to think that way. Now, I guess it's not as mainstream. You know, it's more accepted to live a, quote, child-free life. You know, back then it was like, yeah, everybody gets married, everybody has kids. But yeah, so there's that. And as far as the Christianity part, my husband and I have actually been to a lot of churches as well, different denominations. And we actually were even in ministry. He was a youth pastor himself, and I would help him with that, do Bible studies and things like that. And we have personally been frustrated with a lot of mainstream churches, even as Christians, even as born-again believers, because it does seem like there is a lot of compromise going on, I guess because they don't want their, you know, their tax-free stuff taken away. There's a lot of compromise. There's a lot of people pleasing in the church right now. Not all churches, but a lot of churches. Right now we go to a small, very small, local church that's not chain, like some churches have multiple locations in the country. And that's not necessarily bad, but it's very local. It's not trying to appeal to the masses. It's just focusing on teaching the Bible. But with the other churches that we've been to and we've experienced, we just realized there's a lot of people pleasing. There's a lot of entertaining, not enough discipleship, not enough Bible teaching. There's a lot of trying to make people stay, you know what I mean? So that they can keep getting their tithes and they can keep getting the money coming in and look successful, because there's a lot of people in the building. But it was frustrating for us because they sounded not all the churches we've been to, but a lot of them, they sounded more like, I don't know, mainstream media than they did the Bible. And that's what you're seeing with a lot of churches today. They are sharing, you know, Black Lives Matter talking points. They don't even know what Black Lives Matter is about. They don't know that they're Marxists. They don't know that they're fake and fraud, that they're not legitimately, you know, they don't legitimately care about what they say they care about. But they don't, the churches that are like that, they don't really care to care or care to understand, because it's all about looking good for the public. It's all about looking hyper inclusive. You know what I mean? And so, again, not all churches, but a lot of them. And I think that has to do with the subversion, too, in the churches. It's not just the country that's been subverted. It's churches, too. I mean, that's a huge way to subvert a society, is through their faith, through the religious, you know, part of their life, through that community that should be extremely tight-knit because of their faith. But now they're very, very shallow and almost kind of like not needed at all, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I think with what's happening with, you know, the attacks on Christianity right now, and also because of this COVID, you know, shutdown. Sorry, my voice. Excuse me. Because of the shutdown and also because of these riots, I think there are going to be a lot more home groups, like how it was in the Book of Acts, for example, versus the mass gathering, which has its pros and cons. But I think that if Christians don't stand up, if they don't put their foot down and push back, if they keep being pacifists and keep apologizing and keep trying to please everybody, they are going to lose. And it's not going to be God's fault. It's not going to be God's will. It's because they didn't try. They didn't want to try. They didn't want to be offensive, you know. They didn't want to do what's right. They wanted to be comfortable. And I know that sounds like harsh, but it's the truth. I mean, I've been there. I've been that way too. But if we don't put our foot down and push back and protect what is right and what is good, we're going to possibly end up like the Christian persecuted church in China. And we shouldn't, because we have, you know, the freedom to push back right now. We have the right to assemble. We are a Christian nation as far as our history, as far as you know, what we're rooted in. But I mean, it all comes down to what the church chooses at large. And I hope they step up and do what's right. I'm all for, you know, like another crusade. I'm not a pacifist. I am not. I will defend who I love and what I love, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm not going to, you know, it's not loving to let your children be killed. God needs his people to be on the planet to preach the gospel. And if everybody is getting, you know, killed or persecuted, who's going to preach the gospel? Who's going to reach the masses? I mean, this is backwards thinking. We've seen what happened, you know, in the Middle East with the Christians there, like in Syria, et cetera. People who were Christians in Syria and other places telling me, like, we, you know, we are seeing the same pattern happening here. And that's not the route that we want to go. And they're warning us about what's happening. And also, I know a lot of Christians who, you know, tried going to church, I don't know if they've converted, you know, they've given their lives to Christ or not, but they've tried going to church, and the church aspect was what pushed them away. I totally understand that. Totally understand where you're coming from and where others are coming from. Because even as a born again believer, as a Christian, I was pushed away from some of these churches. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, what is this? You know, they sound just like the world, you know, and that's extremely disappointing. So I sympathize with people who are coming off, you know, who feel that way based on their experience. I would just say that if there's nothing else that, you know, if there's not a church you can find, I would suggest even just going one-on-one with God, asking him for answers, talking to him, being honest, and asking him to help you understand the Bible. Because actually when I was, you know, when I became a Christian, I wasn't at church. I wasn't in the church building. I wasn't listening to a pastor. I didn't go up to the altar and give my life to Christ. I was actually in my bedroom floor. Like, I was in my room all by myself. I was reading a book that was talking about Christianity and about life and things like that. And basically one part of it hit me really hard, where it talked about like how even as I've been a sinner and even as I have been doing my own thing, living my own life this whole time, that God still loved me, that he wanted me and pursued me, and that Christ was his way of redeeming my life and forgiving me, that without Christ, I could not be forgiven. Anyways, I was reading this. I was 16 years old. I was sitting on the floor in my bedroom, carpet floor, I remember. And when that hit me, I just started bawling, like crying. And I was just asking God to forgive me. And for the first time, I called him Father instead of like some God I was supposed to get goodies from, you know, give me good grades, you know, help that guy like me back, whatever, all these stuff. Like, I was treating him like a genius at 16 years old. But whenever that hit me, I called out to him and called him a father for the first time. And I asked him to change me. God, change me, change me. I'm sorry, Father, forgive me. And I was crying. Nobody knew what was going on. My family was like in the living room watching TV. And that's when my life was changed. That was July 2006. And I will never forget it, never forget it. And it's been different ever since. And so I say all that to say, you know, he's God and he's available 24/7. He says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and the door will be opened unto you. And sometimes that can happen outside of a church building without a pastor around. You know, of course, he wants us to get plugged into a church, get whether that's a small group, home church, etc., or whatnot. Yeah, that's fine that afterwards, but like it doesn't have to be, you know, at a church building on so-and-so street. Like, it could be anywhere at any time that you can encounter Christ and change your life. But I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think that more than anything, the church needs to push back. They need to wake up and push back, because this isn't anything but self-defense at this point. You know, I've seen them try to dox or try to like rally at a church. You know, Black Lives Matter wanted to go to a church and riot there. And
Bernadine, yeah, they went in a church, that particular anti-white organization. And they were trying to like hand them out in the most absolutely effete and gelded way. They were trying to hand them Bibles, and they were trying, you know, and so I think, I know Mark wants to have some more questions and we can move on. But I wanted to just say, I mean, is the church and the church people that you speak with, and I guess online as well, sort of, I guess globally, since it's online, are they finally acknowledging that the church is under fire because there are white people who are Christians? I mean, are they finally realizing, because this was part of the, and has been part of the problem, is this studious refusal to acknowledge and speak truth, that it's about hating white people. I mean, it's so obvious. You don't paint statues of Mary and Jesus brown and then, you know, right, break the other ones to pieces, you know, where they are sculpted as or painted as white. When the issue is not the race of the participants. So, right. I mean, are you seeing that at all? Because, you know, I've been away from the church one. I don't really check in to see exactly what they're saying. But every now and again, when I do have a look, I see the same willful blindness that we all just need to come together and stop just this generalized hate. There is no generalized hate. I mean, it's clearly anti-white. You have to lie to yourself to say that it's not a targeting of white people. So just briefly, do you see, maybe in a sentence or two, and then we can get on to what Mark has next, anybody in the church, generally speaking, that is finally saying, okay, guys, look, this is, it's obviously they're targeting the white members of the church. And so we need to actually speak out and say, enough is enough. You're not going to target white people anymore in the Christian church. I'll pass it over to you.
Right. I don't know.
Can I just say something before? Can I just jump in there? I just wanted to say it's very interesting what you said about finding a church, because I've actually had a number of friends who wanted to take their children to church, and they started taking their children to church, and they went through a long process of finding a particular church where they felt their children would be safe, where they felt it wasn't right. going to be pushing a progressive or political agenda. They wanted to go to church to right. connect with Christianity and for their children to have a more traditional upbringing. And even though they found a tiny little village church, and when I say tiny little village church, anyone who saw this church in the village it was situated in, it's like something out of a postcard. You wouldn't believe there'd be any kind of homosexuality, any Marxism, any left-wing politics being pushed in that church. But one thing I have right. noticed, especially in the Church of England here in Britain, is that the amount of Marxism and the amount of progressive vicars is unbelievable. And it seems like every strata of that institution has been taken over by the same people who have taken over the education system, the same people who've taken over right. the police force, the same people who've taken over local government. Are you finding that in America, where the larger churches and the larger church organizations have all been completely hijacked? And here in Britain, just to give you some, just to give you a little bit of perspective on the issue, we have, I believe he's an archbishop, and he hung in one of the oldest cathedrals in Britain a picture that depicted Jesus as a black man to appease the Black Lives Matter movement. So this is embedded at multiple levels of the organization. Are you finding that a problem in America, that normal people would just like to go to church but are being put off and repelled from the church because of the Marxism being pushed by those giving the sermons?
Oh yeah, totally. And I think here it just kind of depends on where you are in the country. Obviously the urban, like big cities, they have a ton of churches like that. They're very liberalized, lots of progressive churches there. I think you have more luck if you're at a like suburban or rural area in the country. And demographics also determine that as well. But yeah, if you're in a big city here in the United States, you're going to have rainbow flags flying, whether it's Methodist or Baptist, whatever. It just depends on the specific, like, the people running the churches in that area. So it's kind of like you just have to look into one church at a time, because you never know what you're going to get. It just depends. I see that a lot of, like, mainstream, like, mega churches, though, not all of them, but a lot of them have more exposure. You know, they're online, you know, they have large social media places, social media pages, and so they're more susceptible to, you know, submitting to this propaganda because they're so worried about pushback because they're so exposed, they're so out there, they have so much, they have a large audience online and in real life. So it's really sad. I'm really saddened by it, truly.
And there was one thing I did want to point out, and it's something that's deeply personal to me. Now, I think it's very easy to understand how cruel and terrible abortion is, and I find it very refreshing that you were so honest about the issue of abortion, and that was something that woke you up to the Jewish question, it woke you up to cultural Marxism, it woke you up to the people pushing it. And obviously, a large number of people who have been involved in pushing Planned Parenthood and abortion are Jewish. Now, the interesting thing about that is I didn't really, or I knew it was terrible, but it didn't truly hit home to me how terrible abortion was until Sophia was in the womb. Now, I used to leave the house every morning to go to work. And before I left, I would say goodbye to my girlfriend, and I would always put my hand on the bump. And Sophia would always press back. Wherever I put my hand, she would always press back. And it was almost as if she knew. She definitely knew somebody was touching the bump. But it was almost as if she knew her, that was her daddy's way of saying goodbye. I'd always put my hand on the bump and say goodbye, and she would push back. And we, the first time it happened, we thought, oh my God, that is the cutest thing. It must have been a huge coincidence. And then when it happened again and again and again, we were like, this is absolutely beautiful. And when we went for one of the scans, I remember the nurse carrying out the scan said, oh, your little girl, so cheeky. Look, she's swimming. She's looking at the camera. She's, you know, she's looking at you. You know, she's playing up. And she was moving around. She could tell we were talking about her. She could tell that the scan was taking place. Now, this was an unborn child. And when you've had that experience, when you've had the experience of being a father of, or being a mother and going for one of those scans and feeling your unborn child in the womb, you realize this isn't just a clump of cells. This isn't just a blank canvas. This isn't some personalityless, unfeeling lump. Long, long before the baby is born, the baby does have emotions. It does react to touch, to sound. And we always used to remember when my girlfriend used to have to do a long drive, or if she was sat in a particular position in the car, Sophia would always get in the womb a little bit uncomfortable and start wriggling around and kicking. And we always found that if we played classical music, she would calm down and she enjoyed it. And it was experiences like that that truly make you realize the wonder of the unborn child. And once you've realized that, you've got an emotional attachment, you realize what absolute demons the people are who are behind the abortion industry. And I call it an industry because it is. It's a death industry, but people make huge amounts of money from it. And I want to say that anybody who can perform an abortion, anybody who can tear a baby out of the womb and destroy it, is, as far as I'm concerned, they're not human. They don't have normal functioning human emotions, and they can't rationalize things as a normal human could. It's something that you would imagine that almost a robot or an alien would have to do, or somebody who'd been lobotomized or was on some form of medication so they couldn't feel emotion. Absolutely. Because it is absolutely disgusting. And I think it's really incredible that that was your route to finding nationalism. But obviously there is one thing I'd like to ask you before we move on to the questions. But obviously you're very much associated with a movement that is characterized as a white nationalist movement, as a movement that is desperately trying to stop those of European descent being replaced and displaced and ultimately becoming minorities. Now, obviously you are not of European descent or completely of European descent. How do you feel being involved in that movement, and what attracted you, other than the moral arguments that we've discussed earlier, what attracted you to the white positive sphere?
Right. I believe that, you know, America and Europe, other countries that were founded and built by those of European descent, you know, they should have sovereignty over what they want for their nation. You know what I mean? And I believe the same thing for Japan. You know, the Japanese should have sovereignty over what will happen for Japan's future, for the Japanese people. I'm about half and half. Like what you put in your coffee. I'm of Asian and European descent. I'm probably a little bit more European only because the Filipinos have a lot of Spaniard in them. That's because Spain had conquered the Philippines for 333 years. So there's a lot of mixing that went on during that time. But yeah, I have Filipino, I have Chinese, I have German, I have Scots-Irish and Spaniard. So it's a lot. But I'm kind of complex, I guess, in a way, because I am mixed not only genetically, but also culturally, like my upbringing. I was born in the Philippines, actually. My whole family was. Both my parents are mixed. It's not like what you normally see where the mom is one race and then the dad is one race. You know, usually the mom is Asian and the dad is white or something like that. But both my parents were actually half Asian, half European. So the mixing or whatever you want to say happened generations ago, back in the 40s, back in the 20s. Like my grandparents or my grandfather, you know, he was in the Philippines during World War II, and that's how that happened. And then on my mom's side, it was my great grandfather, great grandfather was from Spain, born and raised, lived there his whole life, went on a business trip to the Philippines, and that's where he met my great grandmother. And so this was back in the day. And both my parents are mixed. I was born in the Philippines, was there until I was 7. We moved to America when I was 7. And it wasn't also, it wasn't like your typical immigration process. It was a little bit different for us because my dad's dad was an American citizen. So he had rights to claim citizenship because his father was in the military and he was a son of an American, you know, soldier. And so I was born in the Philippines, but I've since then, you know, I've grown up in the United States. I don't what is this? I don't know, 22 years now. And even then, I also lived in different parts of the country. So there's that aspect of it. I've lived in parts of the country where there was a lot of Filipinos, a lot of mixed people. I've lived in parts of the country where there were, you know, mostly white people. I've lived in parts of the country where they're mostly Hispanic or Mexican people. So I'm kind of like well-rounded, extremely mixed in different aspects. But so I know what it's like to grow up in a place where they really emphasize your heritage if you're not white. Does that make sense? For example, like in Southern California, since there were so many like people from Mexico or from the Philippines, there were cultural like clubs for Filipinos and Mexicans and things like that, so that we could, you know, embrace our culture, our traditions, our dance or our apparel or food preferences, etc. But there weren't any for like white people. There wasn't any, you know, group or clubs for those of German descent or, you know, whatever descent. Only for Filipinos and Mexicans and things like that. But then I lived like in Virginia and there were hardly any non-whites there, the parts that I lived. And, you know, they were very, they emphasized U.S. history. They were all about the pioneers, all about colonialism and things like that. And so what I'm saying is I've had a very interesting upbringing. and I can see both sides of the discussion, you know, the non-whites and the white people during this time, where race is kind of like the center of every conversation now. And I have actually, as a young girl, was also influenced by the anti-white rhetoric. You know, the rhetoric that white people are boring and they're bland and they're not good at anything and they don't have any culture and they don't have, you know, so and so forth. And part of me believed that at one point. I really did. I thought that they're, you know, not cool. They're not as cool as the other people. And, you know, that's not okay. And God has delivered me from that. But I also remember not learning a lot of things about U.S. history that I had to learn on my own way after high school, way after college. And one of the things that I learned that really changed my mind and my heart because of my understanding was changed was when I learned about the Hart-Celler Act. here in the United States, where I didn't know it before, but apparently immigration wasn't immigration from non-European or non-white countries was not legal in the United States until after 1965. And when I learned that, a lot of things started to click in my mind. The fact that my family didn't, and my relatives didn't move to the United States until way after the 60s, like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Okay, so that made sense. And I also understood why, in some ways, there's a reason why a lot of, like, the white demographic had, quote, advantages, you know, in society. And if for no other reason, it was because they were here longer. Does that make sense? They were here longer, so they were able to build for a much longer amount of time. Whereas, like, for example, me and my family, we moved here and we had, like, nothing. We came here with practically nothing. And we had to build from the ground up starting in, you know, the 90s. And because I was in San Diego and I would look at, you know, the wealthy families in downtown, they're all white. And then in the, like, more ghetto parts of town, they were all, like, non-white. And I would have, like, resentment sometimes and be like, wow, look, you white people, I guess the white privilege, like, the rhetoric, I would believe it and agree with it. But in some ways, it makes sense that, I mean, if you've been here longer, if your ancestors have been here struggling and building and saving and passing on for hundreds of years, then, yeah, they will have a, quote, advantage, right? Versus someone who just came here a few years ago and has to start from the ground up. But then you also have those who are not white move here with degrees, and they start off right away as nurses, start off right away as, you know, this and that, which my stepmom moved here, and she's like a high-end nurse. But the point is that this country was built from the ground up by those of European descent. I mean, that's just a fact. You know, we can argue about what happened with the Native Americans and those of European descent that came here and the craziness. I mean, both sides were not innocent. At the end of the day, when those of European descent came here, there were no institutions, there were no buildings, there were no roads, there were no planes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They built that. And that was how it was legally, as far as who could move here until 1965. Even some European countries were not allowed to immigrate to the United States, and you had to have certain qualifications to move here, right? So even as a white person. So to me, this is about being fair. To me, this is about the fact that whites are a global minority. And not only that, they're the global minority, and they're the ones being demonized and attacked by the media, by academia, by corporations. They're enemy number one. You know, they are being treated like they're not human, like they're absolutely evil, and they've never done anything wrong. They've always been horrible people. And to me, that's offensive because, like, I have family that's white. Does that make sense? I have relatives who are 100% white. They have, I mean, yeah, they're just totally white. I mean, there's no denying it. And I am married to a white man, and my children are like 3/4 or more white. And so when they say white people are evil, you know, the media and all these people, and now it's becoming mainstream where everyday citizens are saying, you know, white privilege and white people are evil. When I hear things like that, it's wrong to me. You know, it's, they're not only attacking half of my ancestors, you know, half of my relatives. They're attacking my husband. They're attacking my kids. And it's just not fair. This is, and they're doing these things in white countries. So to me, if this was happening, for example, to Asians, okay, if Asians were the global minority, which they're not, and if Asians were being attacked by the media, can you imagine that? Can you imagine all of television, all of blue check marks on Twitter, all of the media saying Asians are wicked, evil people. If this was happening to them, it would be wrong, and I would speak up against it too. But Asians are not the global minority right now, and they're not being demonized and villainized in their own homelands, in their own home countries. I'm sure they're probably the next target because, you know, it happens, but not to the extent that it's happening to white people. But I would be speaking up against an anti-Asian rhetoric too. Does that make sense? If that's what was happening, but it's not. It's happening against white people who are a global minority, the global minority. And it's not right. It's not fair to attack them in their own homelands and to tell them while you're living there, to tell white people that they're absolutely horrid, wicked, evil people while you're living in their homelands and thriving, you know what I mean? And existing in the countries that their ancestors built. And just trying to pin slavery on white people is absolutely disgusting. It's absolutely dishonest, and it's just not fair. It's not just, it's not right. And I grew up in Western civilization. I love it here. I would not want to move elsewhere. You know what I mean? These are the kinds of places that I want to live in. And I don't want it to see, I don't want to see it turn into something else that it's not.
Well, thank you. We do have some super chats tonight, so we're going to read them. And if you want to make a donation, or if you want to contribute via a super chat, you can still do so. I'm dropping the entropy in the link in the chat. The first question is for me, and it's from Jacob Patriotic, and it's £5. Thank you very much. He said, good evening, Mark. What are your thoughts on Britain's monarchy, and do you support having a royal family? Well, on the face of things, yes, I do support having the royal family. I think the royal family could be very good for the UK. And I think it is something that is deeply rooted in our tradition. We did fight a civil war to get rid of the royal family. And after we fought the civil war, we then invited them back. So we are one of the few countries that still has a monarchy. And I do think that the monarchy could be a source of strength for the people, a source of inspiration. But unfortunately, the current monarchy is a complete farce. They constantly come out with anti-white statements. Prince Harry has been totally cucked by Meghan Markle, is an absolute disgrace. And Prince Charles, who is likely to inherit the throne from his mother, unfortunately, described himself, rather than as defender of the church or defender of the faith, defender of the faiths. He believes that all religions have a place here in the UK. He is very, very pro-Islam. He is very pro-mass immigration. And the Queen constantly makes speeches about how diversity enriches us. Now, I realise that some people are going to say, well, Mark, the Queen doesn't write her own speeches. The Queen gets told what to say. The Queen and Prince Charles, they're forced into towing this politically correct line. Well, I don't really follow that school of thinking. These people are phenomenally rich beyond all of our comprehension. They are pampered. They have huge amounts of power. They have huge amounts of public support. If anybody is free to speak out against the ills afflicting the UK, it is the monarchy. They could do something positive for the people of Britain, but at the moment, all they want to do is push diversity and multiculturalism. So in summation, I am pro-British, pro-indigenous monarchy. I am not in support of a monarchy that hates the people that built Britain. And I think at the moment, the monarchy seems to despise the people who built Britain. And you've got to remember, we're the ones that are paying huge amounts of tax every year. A large amount of that goes to the monarchy. And these people live off, the monarchy lives off the people. So they should act in the people's interests, and they're not doing that. But thank you for the super chat. Jez gave $10 and said, if you're interested in joining fellow nationalists in an upcoming paintball day, message user UKWWG on Telegram. Well, thank you for that, Jez. And I'm going to read that again. Anyone that wants to come to a nationalist paintballing day. It'll be in the Yorkshire area. If you're interested in joining that and you're on Telegram, message user UKWWG on Telegram. So thank you for that, Jez. Liam Robson gave £3 and said, Bernardine asserted that homosexuality is propagated by an ideology. I'm innocuous to this misconstrued statement. This is highly fictitious. I'm homosexual, yet I'm a fervid, avid nationalist. I think what Bernardine means, and I'll let her answer in a second, is that homosexuality is being pushed in schools. And although some people are clearly born homosexual, some people have that as a sexual orientation from birth, many young people, and I've spoke to many young people who've actually had this problem, have been corralled or convinced into experimenting with the homosexual lifestyle due to their interactions at college, university, schools, and often being pushed into it by lecturers and people in positions of authority. What's your take on that, Bernardine?
Right, I agree with you 100%.
Okay, thank you very much. Novi Honza gave $10. Thank you. And he said, just support for Patriotic Weekly Review. Thanks for Bernardine. 14 for the future of white children in secure homelands. Well, thank you very much. The Thin Red Line gave $10 and said, great stream as usual, Mark. Are you familiar with Dr. Andrew Joyce and Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson? They are both really interesting. Would you consider having them on PWR? I am familiar with Dr. Andrew Joyce, but not with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. And I am open to numerous people coming on PWR. And next week we have the White Art Collective. And the week after we have Chris, the 30-year-old boomer. So we do have a number of good guests coming up. And we are going to be having many, many more. And we've got something special planned for episode number 75. I can't believe we're already approaching episode 75 so quickly. But we are, and it is going to be a very, very good episode. Syrup gave £5, thank you very much, and said, it's interesting to see how our group talk about religion with its high standards and values. Compare it to the other people who spend their entire history trying to trick God and find ways to cheat on his rules. No wonder they all became lawyers. Well, thank you very much for that, Syrup. Jez gave another $5, thank you very much, my friend, and said, you need a moderator on the Entropy chat. We do indeed need a moderator on the Entropy chat. If any of our trusted mods want to moderate Entropy at the same time, they would be more than welcome to do so. Thank you very much. And for anyone who wants to, the Entropy chat is open as well, and the link is in the DLive chat now. Midsun Man 09 gave $3 and said, thanks for another good stream, ladies and gentlemen. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Damien Demento gave £20. Thank you very much. He said, hi, hope all is well. Just want to say what a wonderful guest Bernardine is. She really has hit the nail on the head with the state of Christianity today, something which is vastly evident in Britain, thanks to the likes of Welby. PA14, thumbs up. Thank you very much, my friend. Blunderbuss gave $25 and said, I had to work last week just wondering why Twitter didn't shut it down when Jewish privilege was trending about 10 days ago. Well, indeed. And if people want to know all about Jewish privilege, I did a video last week, which is a BitChute exclusive, called Black Lives Matter and the Jewish Terrorist. Go and check that out. It is the story of a lady called Susan Rosenberg. And Susan Rosenberg is a Jewish terrorist who was attached to the Weather Underground and the May 19th communist organization. And after her time in those two groups, she was not only involved in terrorist actions that led to the death of police officers and security guards, but she was also caught with 700 pounds of explosives, as well as numerous firearms and thousands of fake ID cards. Yet she was pardoned by Bill Clinton after just 16 years in jail. Imagine that, a domestic terrorist being pardoned by a sitting president. I can tell you this now, if she'd been a white nationalist, she would have either faced the chair or spent the rest of her life behind bars. Ryan 354 is £8. Thank you very much. And he said, the official Liberal Democrat Party are live streaming on YouTube right now. They don't even have a tenth of the live viewers that you guys pull in every stream. PA all the way. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Junta Mominari gave $3 and said, were you aware that Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines was married to a Jewish woman and all his children are Jewish, also has huge connections to Chabad Lubavitch in the country? No, I wasn't. And Liam Robson, sorry for that, my error, gave £3 and said, I too also believe that Section 28 shouldn't have been abrogated. Cultural Marxists are indoctrinating children to believe they have an inalienable right to be homosexual. I'm also a Christian. Well, thank you for clarifying your point, and thank you for the super chat. Well, that is the super chats for tonight so far, but if you want to make a donation, please do so. The entropy link is in the chat. We do have some questions as well, and there is one issue I wanted to bring up with the guys here, because at the end of this week, before we go to the questions, at the end of this week, we are here in Britain going to be forced by law into wearing face masks in all enclosed public areas and shops. Now, I don't know what the laws are like in your state, but I find this to be an absolute scandal. This is a complete restriction of our liberties. And to force people to wear these face masks, which you've got to remember, not too long ago, face masks were actually being touted by the government as something that might actually help spread the disease and definitely wouldn't help stop spreading this disease. And it's also got to be noted that here in the UK, the government has just admitted in the last week that they have exaggerated the COVID-19 mortality rate. And this is something that's very interesting, because they have now admitted that the mortality rate has been increased, because anyone who has died of natural causes but at one time or another been tested positive for COVID-19 has been added to the COVID-19 death toll. So what's it like over there in the States at the moment? Are you guys in your state, both you, both Jason and Bernadine, are you being forced to wear masks? And do you oppose the imposition of masks upon the public?
Yeah, I think it varies state by state. But I think a lot of them are increasingly demanding for these muzzles to be worn. We've had an altercation at a restaurant. Just last week, we were going to a restaurant and they were basically telling us that they weren't going to serve us because we weren't wearing masks. And it's a restaurant, so they were demanding that we wear it while we tell them how many of us were there to be seated. Then we could take it off and eat. Put it back on when we leave. And it's absolutely ridiculous. It's unnecessary. We basically told them, no, we're not. We're not wearing it. This is ridiculous. We're never coming back here. We're never spending any money here again. We were regular customers. But what was funny was that it wasn't just the employees who were telling us this. It was the other customers who felt the need to do the right thing and tell us what to do. It was just sheep. It was a totally perfect demonstration of sheep-like behavior, and we just left. We didn't submit to it. And if you go to like a store or anything like that, they tell you at the front door to wear a mask. Honestly, I've just been wearing it around my wrist and drinking something the whole time when I'm in there, and they haven't told me anything. It's unbelievable. I can't believe it's happening right now.
What are your thoughts on the mask situation, Jason?
Well, it's Bernadine's right in that it's varying state by state. And the anti-whites, ultimately, this is a scenario where, as is always the case, when anything happens, the anti-whites use it as an excuse to move forward with the anti-white agenda. And so we see that, for example, and before I forget the point, I want to make sure I mention that, well, first of all, most businesses are now requiring, asking, demanding that the folks who come in to as Bernadine is talking about, eat their meal or buy their oil for their automobile, that they wear a mask. Well, so there'll be a sign on the fronts of the doors of the businesses in the U.S. that say mask required inside. Hotels are doing it as well. But we can see now, I think it is Broward County, perhaps, in Florida, where they have now passed a law that requires you to wear masks inside of your home. And they are asking the community, Soviet style, to report on their neighbors whom they see are not wearing masks in their homes. Now, this is a great example of where science and healthcare should prevail. The fact should prevail. And what we have when it comes to the wearing of masks is some contradictory facts. We see that some studies are showing that they provide protection. Others are showing that they provide protection when in surgical environments. Others are showing that they don't provide any protection, substantial protection at all, especially given the fact that there are some studies coming out that show that detectable levels of COVID-19 were not found in those who were infected with COVID-19, who were either wearing a mask or not wearing a mask on their exhalations. And in fact, I think in one of the studies, they even asked the participants who were infected with COVID-19 to cough to see if they could find substantial level of COVID-19 in the aerosol that escaped, and they still were unable to find a detectable level, which of course would indicate that what the spread is primarily by touching surfaces that have been touched by those who are infected, maybe coughed into their hands, sneezed into their hands or something of this nature. And then the person, once you touch it, you then go to your mucous membrane, eyes, ears, nose, or mouth. And of course you can have the secondary and tertiary passageways. So you touch something infected, you then touch maybe your doorknob, you then sanitize your hands, then you grab your doorknob again, and then you rub your eye, and then you get infected with COVID-19 that way. The other thing that we have to keep in consideration here is that people with COVID-19 are, every time they're tested, they're counted again. This is when Trump was talking about, we have too much testing in the United States. He wasn't talking. Of course, the anti-white regime, the media, wanted to report that Trump wanted to reduce testing for those who might be infected or who could be infected. And of course, the United States has the most testing going on worldwide. What he was referring to is the retesting and retesting of those who are infected. And every time they are retested, they are counted again as a case of COVID-19. So ultimately, what sober minds could say is that we have a disease here that can be caught. Some have no symptoms. Some get a cold. Some get quite sick. Some get very sick, even though they don't have a comorbidity. And those with comorbidities all have serious issues with it. And we should approach this as a mature country, countries around the world. And we would if white people controlled our destiny. Don't. And so instead, what we have is we have the anti-whites who want to use this opportunity to enforce any amount of tyranny that they can enforce upon us to bend us to their will. And so the mask wearing would become something that if Biden were elected, it would be a national law immediately. And we have Georgia, I believe this the state government in Georgia, who is either working on or has already passed, or perhaps it was a order from the governor saying that no business could require people to wear masks, that they could wear them if they wanted to indoors or not. So it is really going to come down to be a state-by-state issue. But you're looking at this, and I'll pass it back to you, Mark. You're looking at a situation where you have hydroxychloroquine, which is 50 cents a pill and has been shown now around the world in numerous studies to be extraordinarily effective against COVID-19, so much so that in India, they are handing out this 50 cents a pill as a prophylactic. This is less than candy, and they are handing it out as a prophylactic. But in the United States, the anti-whites can use it as a cudgel against Donald Trump. And that is why we have people dying in the United States. We need to place the blame where the need, where the blame should be placed. These deaths, where you have these governors, these anti-white governors in New York and California and Michigan, where they moved infected people into nursing homes, the most vulnerable communities, massively killing whole slew. This is murder fields need to be laid at the feet of these anti-whites. And now they're going to say, of course, what seems a double standard, when white people get out into the streets, when white people get out into the streets and they say, enough of this tyranny, and some of them aren't wearing masks. The governor, Gretchen, and the rest are saying, oh, look at these people, these murderers out in the streets spreading COVID-19. And a week later, she's in the streets with a bunch of anti-whites of various races, locked arm in arm, without masks on, spreading COVID-19. And why? Because in both cases, they can inflict injury on the white race and Western civilization. So it is time for good people of all races in Western civilization. And we say all the time, Mark and everybody knows here, we say all the time, anybody of any race or half white or three quarter white or 1/10 white can support white well-being. And they damn well better start supporting white well-being, because if they don't, electricity, running water, waste removal, law and order, all of this is going goodbye. All of these other countries around the world only exist with law and order because the West exists with law and order. And if it wasn't dependence on the West, and that includes all of these big countries, China and the rest, certainly all of the Middle Eastern countries, all of Central South America, they would cease to exist in a matter of months, if not weeks. They would descend into tribal warfare, and this whole matrix of this global business and countries, and folks, if you don't know the history, the white man made these countries up. We invented them. All of the non-white countries we invented, we drew on a map. You need to look back only to see in history not that long ago that there were various tribes, various kingdoms, and the Asians were the furthest along with their kingdoms, certainly relative to the Middle East and Central and South America and definitely Africa. But they were nonetheless random kingdoms that the white man arrived at and then said, you know what, this is going to function a lot better economically, logistically, legally, if we carve this up into a country and we say your country. You know, a great example, folks, if you've never studied, I'll pass it back to Mark. This is one people don't often think about, is the state of Hawaii in the United States. You had random tribes. You had a dozen or so random tribes in Hawaii that ritualistically genocided and murdered each other in regular warfare. The white man showed up, found the most powerful tribe on the islands, and said, okay, we're now going to side with you. We're now going to call you a kingdom. And you're now, this leader here is now going to be a king. And one of these wives that he has is now going to be the queen. And we even built for them a European-style castle and gave them European-style royal robes to wear. And now you can look into the history books, because everything's being rewritten by the anti-whites. You can look into the history books and see now that they talk about this royal family and this royal kingdom and the castle they built as though that was the way the white race found them when we showed up there, not realizing that we built all that shit and gave it to them. If it hadn't been for us doing that, there would have been none of that. In fact, you can still find the drawings and the photographs of what they looked like when we showed up. And they certainly didn't have the great red royal robes on and the great crown and all of this sort of business. So you even have, as part of anti-whiteism and as part of the anti-white narrative, this reclamation of Hawaii for the Hawaiian royal family of something that didn't exist until we showed up and said it should. I pass it back.
Thank you very much. And you made some very important points there. I always find it absolutely hilarious when you hear it's mainly people of African descent talking about they were kings and queens. And it always amuses me, because to suggest that every single African was somehow a king or queen really underlies a major a major sort of problem with their thinking. Not every single person can be a king or a queen. Kings and queens are special because they are very small in number and have large numbers of subjects. But for these people to all believe that they were all kings and queens at one time, it just absolutely bizarre. And the people feeding them this garbage must be laughing their heads off, because they are weaponizing these people to hate whites. But at the same time, they are doing it with such absolute nonsense. And the fact that some of these people believe that Wakanda is a real place and that the events of the film Black Panther were somehow a factual retelling, it really does beggar belief. And I also think that the white people who go along with that narrative are very, very patronizing to these blacks. Because if you saw a white person who believed in Star Wars or who believed in Flash Gordon, you just tap them on the shoulder and say, look, mate, you're making a bit of a fool of yourself here. You know, you do realize that's a film. It's not real. But the way they treat, the way these white liberals treat these blacks, they really do infantilize them. It's incredible. But it's also very, very amusing. We've had some more super chats. And we've got another one from Junta Mominari for $3. And he said, riddle me this. If what he speaks weren't true, why is the only person you can't criticize the space? I'll leave that up to people in the chat to fill in the blank word. Thank you very much. Jacob Patriotic gave £3 and he said, just a suggestion, it might be smart to publish the manifesto on the website before the 9th of August, as a lot of people are likely to check out the movement and be intrigued to what Patriotic Alternative has to offer. Yes, we have now finished our first full draft of what is going to be a plan, numerous point plan, rather than a manifesto. The manifesto will be something different, but we are going to lay out a framework of our beliefs and where we stand on key issues. And this is going to be posted online before August the 9th. And myself and Laura will be doing a special stream to update people again on the progress PA is making. We have lots of things to announce, lots of things to launch. And one of those is our plan. So people who have signed up on the website, www.patrioticalternative.org.uk, people who have already signed up there will be the first to hear about this. They will get the announcements first. So if you haven't signed up, make sure you do, and you'll get lots and lots of useful information, including all the latest updates and invites to events. Miss Britannia gave $5. Thank you very much. And said, do you feel that the schism, and this, but this would be a good question for you as well, Bernadine, if you want to answer it. Do you feel that the schism in the present Catholic Church might make for a more conservative and pro-white future pope? Fingers crossed. Now, I'll answer that first. I think the schism in the Catholic Church is very, very interesting. And I think the current pope, I'm not sure how anyone who is a traditionalist can be invested in the current pope in any way, because the current pope, some of the things that he says and does look positively satanic, in fact. I don't believe he is following the Bible. And I've got to say this about Christianity or about any religion. If you're following a religion and that religion lays out clear guidelines, and those guidelines are meant to be the word of God, are you following that religion? And are you truly invested in that religion? If you decide that you have the power to edit out God's word and simply make up the rules as you go along. I remember seeing Piers Morgan discussing his religious beliefs and actually criticizing Anne Widdecombe. And he was criticizing Anne Widdecombe because she had made comments about certain groups and why they weren't really living a moral life. Now, Piers Morgan said, oh, but the church is, you know, it's reformed, it's different. And he was going on about how he was a Christian, but he doesn't believe these terrible things. He doesn't believe those parts of the Bible. Well, the Bible isn't an all-you-can-eat buffet where you can walk along and pick the bits out you like and leave the bits you don't like. It doesn't work like that. It's either the word of God that you have to follow, or you're not following the word of God, and your word is more important than God's, which means, really, by your own metric, you are a heretic. And I think what's going on in the Catholic Church is very interesting. I think there are still many good people in the Catholic Church. I don't believe the Pope is one of them. But equally, I don't believe that anyone who actually believes that the Bible is the word of God would ever edit anything out of the Bible, because that is what God intended. That is what God wanted people to live by. And if you're not following that, how you can call yourself a Christian is beyond me. What's your take on that, Bernadine?
Well, I don't know or follow the Catholic Church enough. personally, so I don't feel like I can talk about it without saying something that might not be accurate. But what you're saying about, you know, you can't just pick and choose what you want to believe. You submit to it, you study it, you understand it, or you reject it. And so, yeah, if you're not living by the word, it's very difficult to, if you're not even wanting to, you know what I mean? If you're not even wrestling with what it says and you just outright say, I don't believe in that, I'm not gonna even bother trying to understand that or seek the truth about that, then it'd be difficult for you to say that you're a follower of Christ if you don't follow the word of God. So.
Well, thank you for that. We have another super chat from Junta Momonari, $5. Thank you very much. And he said, highly untrue what Jason said. China was a superpower in ancient times. The four great inventions of the ancient times were the compass, gunpowder, paper, and the cannon. European powers overtook China during the Industrial Revolution. China is the superpower that the Zionist occupational government hates. Well, thank you very much for that. Blunderbuss gave $10 and says, not on topic and just a rhetorical question, but Republican Mitch McConnell talks about the timeless principles of our founding fathers and the stain of original sin all in the same statement. Who can vote for this guy? Mitch McConnell, could you vote for him?
No, I'm not sure. No comment.
No comment. Well, I'm trying to get the answer. Thank you for the super chat. That isn't the best answer to that question. I always feel bad if we can't answer. Sometimes you get these super chats where they ask a question, you've already answered it really well earlier in the show. And sometimes you get ones you just can't answer. But thank you for the donation. It will be put to good use. And I'm sorry we couldn't answer your question any better. We do have plenty of questions, though, from the chat. Adam, I'm going to read the top three out. And because there's been people leaving some foolish questions, I'm actually going to pick the three questions I like best this week. Adam gave the following question. He said, thoughts on the Tories banning, and I always mispronounce this, if Jason or Bernadine want to correct me, it's the Chinese phone company. I always pronounce it Hawaii. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Huawei. I don't know how to pronounce that properly. I think in this case, we should openly show support of this move and approval of the Conservative Party's actions. I do believe that that company was involved in certain underhanded tactics, and they were using some of the technology that they would be installing to aid the Chinese government and to aid spying. So I do actually agree with that. And I do think that when it comes to mobile phone networks, phone infrastructure, all of that should be developed, dealt with, managed and installed by British companies. I don't believe that any foreign power should be installing networks in this country that they could then use to spy on the British people or to influence the British people in any way. We already have enough foreign fingers meddling in British politics without them spying on us too. Anti-Weimar Roy said, hi, Mark, are you looking forward to when the elections get started again? Sort of. At the moment, I'm more looking forward to future PA events. At the moment, all eyes are on August the 9th. I absolutely cannot wait for August the 9th. I can't wait for Indigenous Peoples Day. It's going to be really, really fun. I've had so many emails from people who are getting involved, and I'm really, really heartened that there's such a buzz about this. And now, last time the media did ignore the White Lives Matter banner, but are they going to be able to ignore dozens of White Lives Matter banners? And if they do, we'll have to up the number and put hundreds up the next year. But it's a great initiative, and I really, really am boosted and very, very happy that so many people are taking part in this day of action. And our Facebook page is still doing great guns from that one banner drop. So I think this time we'll do even better. But yes, when the elections, when electioneering comes around again, we will be paying a close eye to it. But at the moment, our eyes are on the immediate future. Rory Herbert said, hi, Mark, did you receive the copy of my legal guide via your PO box? Yes, I did, Rory. Thank you very much. We got it the other day. And yes, Patriotic Alternative now has a PO box. So if you want to send us anything in the mail, or if you have anything that would be of interest to us that needs communicating in that way, get in touch with us and we will advise you. And I believe Laura's not in the chat because she doesn't have a DLive account yet. But is the PO box on the website somewhere? Hopefully. But yes, we do have a PO box so we can be contacted via post. We are moving forward as quickly as we can. And let's just have a look and see if there's any other good questions. Arab Social Nationalist said, have you considered the availability of genuine right-wing allies in the Middle East and beyond? There's two more questions I'm going to ask from the chat. Yes, I'd be very willing to ally with people who are ethno-nationalists abroad. We believe that all individual people the world over have their place in the world, and we want to see them flourish in their own ancestral homelands. And people people of Arab origin who want to stay in the Middle East and make the Middle East a better place for Arabs, and who are committed to preventing vast large-scale migration into Europe because they want to make Arab states a better place, I would happily lend my support to, in the same way that I happily lend my support to black nationalists who are part of the Back to Africa movement. I think all of those things are very important. And here's another very good question. This is from the mayor of Sparkletown. He says, what are your thoughts on the 2020 US census? Will the results have a substantial impact on Meta politics? This is for Jason and Bernadine. What are your thoughts on the 2020 census? And when Americans get the results and realize how close white people are to being a minority, do you think that will shake things up in America?
Oh, you want me to go first? I think people are waking up to it. I mean, I've been talking about this kind of stuff, not nearly as long as any of y'all, obviously, but for like the past year, you know, just talking about the anti-white rhetoric and things like that, year and a half. And I've noticed that even more recently, like the last few weeks, last few months, people have really been more accepting of it, like realizing that it's true, that it's real, it's not a conspiracy theory. And I'm seeing a lot of white people wake up to the fact that they're being targeted, you know, and it's been really nice to see them accept the information and accept that that point of view so openly recently, whereas before they were kind of like, whoa, why are you talking about race? You know, does it matter? Don't talk about whiteness and stuff like that. It's not what matters. But I think they're seeing that they are being targeted. Their kids are being targeted. They are, you know, being taken advantage of. Opportunities are being taken away. It's being rigged against them, not just right now, but long term. So I think they're waking up, and I hope they wake up sooner than later. I hope that they see what happened in South Africa and really wake up and do something about it. I mean, because, yeah, I don't know. In the end, it's up to them. If they don't do anything about it, it's going to be very scary. But if they wake up and step up, there's going to be a fighting chance, you know?
Well said. I know we're getting short on time, and it's kind of a big question that could take a while to elaborate on. But ultimately, it's this. I think what the questioner is getting at is, Mark, is that he's asking about meta politics, and the term probably should be fed promptly to the garbage disposal. We don't need any more philosophical discussions about what new bizarre, mysterious, esoteric view on the nature of socio-political existence, and another tome on it, and another academic peacock talking about it. This is all garbage. The question really is about politics, and is a specific number that folks, the general average, you know, white, vague out there, brother and sister out there, who's going to hear, oh my gosh, well, we actually are now a numerical minority in the United States, or what have you. What kind of effect will that have? Well, if they don't have the lexicon and dialectics of going free, it will have no effect. the same way it had no effect in Rhodesia, the same way it had no effect in South Africa, the same way it had no effect in St. Domingo, the same way it had has had no effect every time. And I think the another commenter earlier, and I can kind of link to this, you know, I couldn't, you broke up a bit on the commenter talking about China and largely their accomplishments in kingdom. You can look directly to Chinese lore and their history about the ones who, the knowledge givers, and how the Chinese kept this tribe of knowledge givers secret for a very long time. And then after the information leaked out, they finally went ahead and revealed the photographs and the DNA and et cetera of these blonde and red-haired knowledge giver tribe that came into the area and then biospiritually informed the leadership and intellectual class in China. So it's going to have zero effect unless we have a verbiage with which to resist the demographic displacement in our countries. And the reason why the verbiage is so important is because as human beings, we can only think in words, which means that if you don't have the words that are the psychological defense for the psychological warfare being waged against us, you simply cannot think in ways to defend yourselves. You can look merely to South Africa and Rhodesia and these other places today and see France. You can look to these places today and see that if you stay within their anti-white narrative, it doesn't matter. And this is what really the questioner, I'll pass it back, Mark, what the questioner is getting at is with this number, is this number going to be bad enough? So are the fires bad enough? Are all of your statues or white erasure, is that bad enough? At what point is it bad enough? Well, it's never going to be bad enough unless you're able to think a way out of the coffin. And I pass it back.
Well, that's a very good point. And I'm going to say this about our census, because we've got a census coming up in 2021. Now, the 2011 census stated that the white population in Britain was about 87% and the white British population in Britain was just under 82%. Now, I think the white British population will drop under 75% this time. I think that there's going to be a lot of changes and they're going to be very negative changes. But I've got to agree with what you've said, Jason. My big worry is that's going to be a Daily Mail article. That's going to be a Daily Mail article where the comments section is full of outrage and shock and, oh my gosh, somebody's got to get to grips with immigration. But when it comes down to it, will it actually lead to any lasting changes? Will it lead to any huge shifts in the way people think or the way people vote? I don't know, but I often see these things create reasonably large splashes in the mainstream media. But unfortunately, after they've done that, people just go back to their soap operas and TV dinners and watching the football and watching X Factor. But when you're watching the white population become a minority at such a rate, and it might even be worse. It's a shame Laura isn't here tonight. Shame she can't just pop on, because she usually gives such amazing predictions and she's full of facts and figures on issues of demographics. But I'd be very interested to see what her prediction is for the white British population, because when you look at the white British births, they're already below 60%. And when you look at white British in schools, they're already at around 66%. So you can see that this isn't just an issue of migrants coming in. This is an issue of migrants who have come here who are breeding extremely rapidly when they get here. So this isn't just a matter now of closing the door. This isn't just a matter of saying, look, we've got to stop mass immigration. Here in Britain, the only way to solve this is to give financial incentives to many, many migrants who aren't being in any way productive or doing anything good for the British people, for them to return to their ancestral homelands. And we've seen over the last few months, many, many black people who hold British passports telling us how horrible it is to live in Britain, telling us how they don't like living here, telling us how it's a racist country that they wouldn't want to bring their children up in. Well, we do have a solution to that. And the solution is very simple. If they hate Britain that much, if they can't stand living here, if this isn't the place they want to bring their children up in, they don't have to. And we as an organization, if we got into power, we would pass legislation to ensure these people were given healthy financial incentives to go and have their children somewhere else where they tell us that they'd be much happier. And I think that sounds like a solution that would please everybody in that equation, which is really, you know, a very, very, very good outcome. And I think America could also do a lot with a policy like that, especially as their southern border has been open for so long. And states like California are now overflowing with illegal immigrants who are, again, breeding at such a rapid rate. But that brings us to about the end of the show. The 2 hours has flown by. So firstly, I would like to thank the lovely Bernadine. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure. Now, before we end the stream and before you go, would you like to tell us a little bit about your T-shirt company, a little bit about what you do? Just be very brief. We've only got 4 or 5 minutes left. But tell us where we can find you. Tell us where you're on social networks. And tell us how we can buy your lovely T-shirts.
Sure. I have a store. It's called BernadineBluntly.com. So it's just my username. So the website is BernadineBluntly.com. And I have a lot of shirts, a lot of merch that all push for traditional values. There are a lot of things there to support moms, full-time moms, full-time homekeepers. It's all about tradition, and it's pro-life and all of those things. All of it's designed by me, and everything is free shipping. So it's really a great way to be an activist. You know, people wear this stuff in public. It's pro-life stuff. It's pro-tradition, pro-stay-at-home mom, all things like that. It's very, you can be an activist just doing normal things in life. And so it's a blessing to them. It's a blessing to my family, something I can do on the side. So BernadineBluntly.com. Also, last thing I do want to say, Mark, just a side note before people start commenting and telling me something about what I said. I agree with what you said about the homosexuality thing, what the person said. I personally don't think that people are born gay. I think that they may be born with a tendency to have same-sex attraction more than others. But I don't think it's like something you can be diagnosed with and something you can't change. But I wanted to say that before some Christians came after me and say, you think people are born gay? I don't think that. But anyways, there's that. And I think that anyone is open to change. Anyone can change. You know, there are different challenges that we all face in life. And we can ask God for grace and forgiveness and for strength. And he will give it to us in Christ. But thank you so much, both of y'all, for having me here. I'm extremely honored. I had a great time. I had a lot of fun. And it was extremely, very, very productive for me.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. And we'll have to have you back on again in the future. Good luck to you, your business, your lovely family, and your husband. And keep up the great work. And everyone, please follow Bernadine over on Instagram. Jason, my friend, who's on tap? And what will you be doing for the rest of the week?
Well, didn't we have a great time today? This was a magnificent show. Let's get a round of raucous emojis together for Bernadine and coming on and sharing her views and everything going on that she sees from her perspective in the Christian church. And, of course, she receives quite a little bit of hatred from the anti-whites. Wonder why. Remember, if you stand up for anything that will trouble an anti-white's ability to inflict injury on Western kind and Western civilization, they are going to call you all of the same anti-white slurs that they will even reveal for Mark, the man who puts the devil in white devil. So you will not escape the slanders if you get in their way. But yes, thank you very much for coming on, Bernadine. It was a great pleasure. Now, this coming Saturday at noon Eastern Standard Time, you'll be able to find myself and Mr. George interviewing John Leonard Bruce, noon, as I say. It's going to be a magnificent discussion, talking about his one of his latest articles. Quite a lot of interesting stuff in there that we're going to be dissecting, unpacking, and expounding upon. So you don't want to miss that, especially if you're interested in meta things, because we're going to be out in Metaville. Finally, big thank you to everyone who showed up today, and Mark Collette himself for all the hard work he does week after week to make sure that we're able to put these shows on for all of you. And let's also keep those raucous emojis going for Mark Collette, who gets a lot of pressure, has a lot of criticisms, doesn't get enough adulation. So thank you so much, Mark, for everything you're doing to make sure that we continue to have PWR and a force to be reckoned with, growing every day in the UK. And I pass it back to you, good brother.
Well, thank you, and thank you for such kind words. Now, before we close the show, I just want to remind everyone, my regular video will be out on Friday, but it is a BitChute exclusive. It is about COVID-19 and all of the anti-white lies. I've been compiling all the lies the governments have told and stitching them together, and you can see when they're all placed in one place just how anti-white the COVID narrative is and how it has turned white people into second-class citizens in the UK. So please check that video out. Again, another BitChute exclusive. We're working so hard to push these BitChute exclusives because they are so, so important, and we have to help that platform grow. That is so very, very important, because BitChute is now the place for all of the best red pill videos out there. YouTube is almost completely dead to us. Also, in the meantime, when you're not watching our videos, go over to Radio Albion. There's loads of great content there. And also keep checking the Patriotic Alternative website. It's updated daily with new news stories, and it is going to be growing. And also, if you haven't already yet, make sure you download your White Lives Matter resources for August the 9th. It is going to be big. And next week, I have already mentioned it, but next week we will be back at the same time with the White Art Collective. And I am very, very much looking forward to that. So that just leaves me to say thank you. Thank you to the lovely Bernadine. Thank you to Jason, No White Guilt. Thank you to everyone who made such generous donations. But most of all, as always, thank you so much to all of the people in the audience tonight. You people are lovely. You are the backbone of our movement. This is what community is about. Stay safe. I love you all. And I will see you same time next week.